Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So this is supposed to be the first talk of our 2015 rains retreats. We have these rains retreats 3 months every year so we can put aside all of our work and relax and take it easy. Ha ha ha. Because it is still very busy. I don't know about for the bhikkhunis, but it's really busy over here still. Getting ready for the conference on the weekend and also my birthday. It's very bad karma to have a birthday in the beginning of the rains retreat. I always say that once the birthday is over, then I can relax, if I survive, that is. And then I can relax and just have a nice, peaceful time. But for those, the monks in this monastery, you know that I had an interesting experience this last week because I started getting really, really tired, too many things going on. And the monks, very kindly, I asked them, can I just have a couple of days and I can just go into my cave and just stay there. And just, you know, you brought food to me, the breakfast and the lunch for those 2 days. And that was absolutely so brilliant. And so I really take the opportunity to thank, you know, the Sangha and this monastery for letting me do that. Because that's all you needed to do. Because sometimes that I noticed myself getting a bit sort of niggly with some of the monks and not being so positive towards them. And all it really was is just tiredness, getting burnt out. And you start to notice that much of the problem with people's anger, guilt, grief, all the negativity in the world, a lot of times it just comes from basic tiredness. So this is also important for the nuns' monastery as well. Please, you know, if someone like Vinahasapanya or Karunika or anyone else there gets really tired, please, it's much, much better just to put them in the hut, lock the door and say, go and retreat for a couple of days. Because they're not such a pain in the ass afterwards. Because all it is tiredness. It's just the nature of the human body and the human mind. Now, when you really get tired and exhausted, then it's very hard to get some kindness coming up. And just basically you go into self-protection mode. You know, because, you know, you're on the edge. And just bodily and emotionally, you're just trying to protect yourself and trying to lessen the work and trying to escape from things and getting upset when you can't do that. It's just nature. Which is one of the also the reasons why there's many people here who've come on a range retreat, you know, from as far away as Germany where are you from, Olga? It's from Argentina? Brazil, all the way from Brazil. And it's, of course, many people coming over from Singapore for a couple of weeks for the conference and a bit of quiet time as well. That is really important in your life, to find those times just to have some retreat. Now, when you are here, please make the best use of it. Because, yeah, sometimes we like to go for walks together, talk together, but a lot of the best time you can spend is just by yourself. And have some solitude, because you know, if you're from a place like Singapore, it's such a small island, it's hard to find solitude. So yeah, you can actually go and do things with other people if you really need to, but some of the best things you can do is just to, you know, stay in your room, go into the meditation hall to do the meditation, or go for a walk by yourself. And go and watch the stars at night by yourself. You know, have your lunch by yourself. Because in that solitude, there's so much peace and you can really relax. It's one of the reasons why I have to have that cave there with 2 doors. It's the only way I can protect myself and have some sort of retreat. And even one of the monks said that when I was on retreat, there's a funny story, that while I was on my just 2 days retreat, not asking for much, as a Sri Lankan couple came. And they said, we're from Sri Lanka, we've come to see Ajahn Brahm. And they said, I'm sorry, he's on retreat in his cave. He said, oh, is he in his cave? Yes, can you please go and get him for us? And thankfully, the good monks here, they protect, said, no, we're protecting him so that, you know, you can have good health and live a long life. And so it's really important for us to value the time taken for ourselves. Sometimes we think that's being selfish, and it's not selfish at all. Because if you spend time by yourself, then when you go back to work afterwards, you can actually produce more, give more, you're kinder, you're healthier. Sometimes when people talk about the stress of modern life, it's nothing to do with how much work we do. Everything to do, as I keep saying, with not taking the time out when we feel tired to rest and find some peace. And that's all one really needs to do. Because when you are by yourself, which hopefully many of you will spend many hours, days by yourself during the next 3 months, and you don't talk to one another, you just go lonely through. Not lonely, I don't mean being alone. So I mean alone, but not being lonely. You feel very happy in your own company. And I always tell people that is a trick for being solitary, but never actually missing anybody. And the reason is because there's always someone with you, and that's yourself. Okay, this is one of the stories in the Good, Bad, Who Knows book. And I'm saying this because there's a lot of people who are visiting here, and I don't tell the story very often. And there was a story of in India a long time ago, where there was a teacher who had a number of students, maybe about a couple of dozen students. And the teacher also had a daughter who was very, very beautiful. And one day the teacher told the students, according to their tradition, that he had to marry his beautiful daughter to one of his students. And he did not know which student should be chosen. And he also had another problem. He said he was quite poor and he could not afford the marriage ceremony and to set the happy couple up in a house with all the stuff necessary. And he had come up with a great solution to solving the problem. And all the students were very interested because they all liked the beautiful young girl. And the teacher said, the solution is this. I want each one of you, I'm going to give you a test. I want each one of you to go into the village in the middle of the night and creep into the houses. The ones which are unlocked, if their doors are locked, go through the open windows, any place you can go in and steal whatever you can find, but make sure that no one sees you steal. And bring the stuff back. And whoever steals the most can marry the daughter. And, as long as you keep the instructions, and all the stolen goods, we can put them together, and I'm sure that will be enough to set up the winner with my daughter into a happy life together. And when the students heard that their teacher was asking them to steal, they were at first shocked. But anyone who's lived in Asia knows that you have to be obedient to your teacher, the hierarchies. And even if they say a stupid thing, sometimes you have to do it, especially if the prize would be the beautiful daughter. So all these young men crept into the village late at night, and they snuck through the windows and through the open doors, and they stole many, many things. At the end of the week, their teacher called them all together and announced, it's the end of the test. You've stolen many, many things, more than enough for the happy couple to celebrate a good marriage and live, you know, get started in their life. You've all stolen a lot, except for one of you. Why, you disobedient young man, didn't you steal anything at all? Why didn't you follow my instructions? And the young man said, but master, I did follow your instructions. Well, why didn't you steal anything then? Well, master, just as you said, I went into the village late at night. I snuck into the houses through open doors or windows, and I saw valuable things lying around, and I was just about to pick them up, but I remember you told me, don't steal if someone is watching you. And the master said, well, who was watching you? And the student said, I was watching me. That's why I couldn't steal. And the teacher said, oh, thank goodness, I have one smart student in my class, and all you other dummies not following the instructions. Now, all you dummies, you can go and take all those goods back to the village. It was all a setup. They expected you. They left things around especially for you. They won't punish you at all. They'll just call you dummies and stupid nincompoops. Because I'm already wealthy enough to give a very good marriage ceremony and set the happy couple up, this wise student, my only wise student, who always knows, whatever you do, there's always someone watching. You are. I always remember that nice story, because if ever I am by myself, there's always someone watching. I am watching me. And that is one of the reasons why, realizing that even if I'm in my cave with all the doors shut and there's no one in there at all, I am watching me. And I make sure that I am a good friend to me. I'm kind, wise to myself. And that means that when I am in solitude, there's always someone with me, and that is my best friend, myself. Now, having that idea of a best friend is really important, especially for those of you who are coming here expecting to develop good meditation. Because I was just proofreading another book, which I didn't realize was happening, because one of the people in Wisdom Publications, they decided to take a bit from this book and a bit from another book and a bit from somewhere else and actually do one of these very small books on meditation. And it was, you know, in one of those little small books, you know, which they're calling Kindfulness, where I was making the very important point that if you try to control your own mind and force it, concentrate, focus, you will find that's not being a friend to your mind. It's being like an enemy, a control freak. And after all the years I've been meditating and teaching meditation, I realized that the biggest problem of a meditator, the wandering mind, never being able to be still for a moment, always thinking about so much stuff, and it's stuff you know is rubbish, you know, remembering old past things which have no bearing and no use at all to you, or planning things which will never ever happen. You know it's not going to happen. Or fantasizing dreams where you're the hero, you save the world, or whatever it is you do in your fantasies. And all of that you know is just wasting time. Why do you do that? And the only reason why people do that is just to escape. Who they're escaping from, they're escaping from themselves because they just don't like themselves. The relationship they have to themselves has been the relationship of a master or mistress to a slave. You treat yourself so badly. You've been doing that for years, you know, for ever since you can remember. Trying to develop your mind, change your mind, criticizing your mind when you make mistakes, feeling guilty, feeling responsible. You've been so harsh to your own mind that you've got a terrible relationship with it. So bad that as soon as a person starts to meditate and face their own mind, they run away. The mind runs away from you. Can't stand you. Not her again. Oh God, I'm not going to... Anything to get away from you. sleep, restlessness, fantasies, anything to get away. Why? Why do people do that? It's because the relationship has never been established in a good, kind way. So, having seen that myself, I make a point that when I am by myself in solitude, I'm always kind to myself. I give myself a break. My mind, if it's tired, it's going to be tired, and I let it be tired. On that weekend, which the monks gave me, the whole weekend, so Saturday morning I slept in, didn't get up at 4 o'clock, which is when I usually get up, or usually earlier, and breakfast was not quite in my bed, but it was just outside, so I could just have a nice breakfast, and afterwards I took a nap after breakfast, and then I had lunch, and took a nap after lunch. I slept for 3 hours after lunch. I never slept that much after lunch. For years. I'm not ashamed at all. I'm kind to my mind. But the result of that, I was just catching up because I was just really worn out. And I trust my body, I trust my mind. So much so, if my body wants to do that, fine. And it's one of those sleeps where you lay down and you just disappear. No dreams, you're just out. And you wake up, wow, that's really nice. What time is it? It can't be. And those are really great because I always feel so good after those. And of course, the next day, Sunday, I was flying in my meditation. Really some of the best meditation for months. Now this, I'm not saying, okay, tomorrow you all must sleep 3 hours or 4 hours after lunch and expect to have a good meditation. This was just what I needed at that time because I was listening to my body and being kind to my own mind. And that kindness is just really so important because I was kind to my mind. When it was the time just to sit down, and the tiredness had gone, the exhaustion had mostly vanished, I could just sit down and just watch my mind. And it was happy to stay with me. No effort at all. I do these effortless meditations. Just sit there and just be, just watch. Don't ask anything from my mind. Don't tell it what to do, because that's not being kind to it. And then if ever I've been kind to any one of you, I treat you the same way as I treat my own mind. Being kind, having fun, telling it jokes, laughing, just enjoying the company of my own mind. And of course, that is what overcomes the biggest obstacle to people's meditation, not being able to be still. Why? Because you're running away from something. What are you running away from? Yourself. So by changing that attitude, not only have a huge boost in your psychological health, you're at peace with yourself, you like yourself, you're happy with yourself. You're happy in your own skin, you're happy in your own little hut, you're happy in your own meditation. And when you have that happiness, you can destroy that happiness so easily on these retreats by setting goals. I've got 3 months, I'm going to achieve the jhanas, I'm going to achieve psychic powers, I'm going to achieve enlightenment, I'm going to achieve all this sort of stuff. And I've been teaching all the last year, please, no goals, no achievements. We're just here to be peaceful. Because when you set a goal, that is when you're going to make a lot of business. You're going to strive, you're going to struggle. You're not going to be happy with yourself. You're going to be critical, you're going to be fault-finding. And you'll find you're just giving up the opportunity. They're giving up the wrong things. You're giving up the opportunity, the chance to develop these incredible, peaceful, blissful, insightful meditations. And I keep on doing this again and again and again just to check that what I teach you I can do myself and that it works. I don't know what it is with, sometimes that if you haven't had a good meditation in a couple of weeks, you tend to think, maybe I'm forgetting this, maybe I'm not teaching it correctly. But that's the best way, I get my confidence as a teacher, to see if you can do it yourself. You can just go into your heart and just start blissing out and allowing everything to disappear and get incredible, deep, powerful peace. And this is how I do it, just being a friend to myself, sitting down there, closing your eyes, getting yourself comfortable and just being. Not trying to get anything. And when you let go of all that striving and all that struggling and all those goals and aims, of course it's going to happen. You're making peace in every moment. You're being kind to your mind, which means your mind relaxes and becomes still. When this goal is something you need to do, this business to be done. And gee, I do enough business in this monastery as it is. I don't want to be an abbot when I meditate. I don't want to do business inside my own mind. I don't want to fix everything up and clean the tanks and clean up the hall and dust the shrine and all that sort of stuff. That's what I do outside. When I meditate, I'm just being. And if you can learn how to just be and be at peace with what you're experiencing. Yeah, it's never blissful when you begin. And it's pretty yucky sometimes when you begin meditation. And dealing with an old body. You know, just I was joking with the other old monk in this monastery, you know, Venerable Upasamo, because I had some trouble with my tummy and I was farting this evening over the tea time. He said, it doesn't matter, that's old men's. And he was an old man too, so he understood. He must have also, you know, bad sense of smell, so he didn't mind. But, you know, sometimes that's what it feels like. You know, you feel a bit sick here, tired there. But at least I have enough experience and wisdom, and I want you to share that too, just to be with your body. Don't try and get rid of the pain or get rid of the problem. Just embrace it, be kind to it. Because otherwise there's always something to fix up, there's always something to do. And that means that we run around in meditation like we run around in life. And sometimes you see this is a big organization, so many people here on this talk. And just how can we find some peace when there's so many people and so many things to do? And we do that by just learning how to take the time off and to give oneself these moments of peace, these days of meditation, these days where you can just go on a retreat. And it's really important that each one of you do that. If you can't go on a retreat for a day, go on a retreat for a few hours, for an afternoon. But for goodness sake, don't spend all the time on this rains retreat just working. And I don't mean working with your hands, I mean working with your brain, thinking and planning and controlling and moaning. That's the work which really tires you out. Sometimes, with all the business and jobs which I have to do, sometimes I look at nearly all of you here and think, you've got it so easy. You know, you don't do a fraction of what I have to do, and the responsibility you have is only a small amount compared to what I have. And I can bliss out. Why the heck can't you? I can take time off. I tell myself, it doesn't matter, let the monastery fall apart. Let the buildings, let the builders just, you know, go crazy. And let all the monks disrobe and marry and become Christians. Whatever happens. Just afterwards, you know, it never does happen. And I go off on 2 days and the monastery just runs perfectly. I think actually probably runs more perfect without me. I'm superfluous, as each one of you is, thank goodness. And so it's great to be able just to take that time off and just let go. And don't, you know, even Ajahn Sujata, you're going off to that island, please don't do sutta translation all the time. Just, you know, have a time, okay, no sutra translation, I'm just going to sit and do nothing. And relax and bliss out, because that's what those suttas are there for. The tail should not wag the dog wags the tail. You know, the suttas are there for peace, for stillness. And I always remember this monastery, Dharmasara Monastery, Jhana Grove, what do we build those things for? And I say, my friend Bernard is here, this hall here, I built this hall, this has got my name on, the building license. and many of the bricks I laid here, and all sorts of other stuff which I did. And I did this for a purpose, so people can just sit here and let go and be still. I didn't do this, you know, to have lots of ceremonies and promote Buddhism and to whatever, just for the one purpose, so a person can find a quiet, comfortable, peaceful place and sit here and do nothing and become really, really peaceful and still and enjoy the meaning of peace. I know it's very rare for me to listen to a Dhamma talk from other people. And that's why the ordination of Jyotika, that when when Venerable Hasapanya gave me the microphone to say a few words while she was dressing, I passed the mic over to Ajahn Bhumali to see what he was saying. And I really like it because, you know, he says some wise things. And, you know, I don't get the chance to hear that. When he was saying the meaning of life is the peace you get in meditation. And that's really, really good, really profound. Well done, Ajahn Bhumali. Because that peace which you get in meditation, the stillness you get, that is the meaning. It's a taste of freedom, as the Buddha kept on calling it. And without that taste of freedom in the deep meditation, you don't understand Buddhism at all. You can't. But once you start meditating, becoming still, letting go, giving up all these goals, just sitting there, being kind to your own mind and letting everything settle down, let all the waves in the mind just subside until your mind is perfectly still, just like the proverbial lake in the mountains, which, because it's still, becomes like a glass mirror and accurately reflects the truth of things. That's actually the Buddhist idea of how you know the truth of things, by keeping your mind perfectly still. So there's no distortion in the reflections in the mind. And if you start practicing like that, not only do you feel this great bliss of a peaceful mind, but also you have this great experience of the profound truths which happen when you're still. There's no truth which is more real than when you're still. And all the thoughts, the insights, the ideas which come when the mind is thinking, they don't even taste the same as truth. It's almost like a false truth, like a second-class truth, the ideas which you get through thoughts. When the mind becomes perfectly still, or not perfectly still because that's going really, really deep, but very still, everything which you feel and experience, you know, does have greater meaning. It feels that this is, you're getting close to the truth. And that's one of the reasons why in the deep meditations you call it the taste of freedom. You've got the taste of it. You realize that all this running around, all this getting things, all this striving for things, all this, you know, healing the body and then getting sick again and then dying and getting reborn again, that's not the truth at all. It's just, you know, what happens deep inside your mind when you're still, when nothing is moving. And in that type of stillness, where nothing moves, that's where you understand your meaning of life, the truth of life. It's obvious, it feels that way, and it's powerful, and it's what you always remembers you. And it's, I keep on telling everybody here, that's what drives me. Just to being able just to take a weekend off and just to taste that freedom again. And I can keep going again for another 3-6 months if I don't have any other taste of that freedom. That's enough. Keeps me going. That's how powerful it is. And of course, you know, it means you're very happy, very peaceful. You understand just all this stuff in this world. Yeah, you know, you struggle with this world, but this is the way the world is. Dogs bark, wives nag, husbands never do things on time. Whatever it is, people always let you down. That's the nature of this world. So I don't ever expect it to be anything different. And for me, perfection is not changing this world. It's not trying to make the perfect monastery. It's not trying to write the perfect book. It's not trying to pay off all the debts. That's not the perfect world, because you never do that. I always thought, raise enough money and then I can retire. I won't have to go over to Singapore, Malaysia or anywhere else again. There's always, as soon as I raise money, the monks spend it. That's what it's like. But that's life, so you just leave it alone. But that's not the meaning of life, to build up big monasteries or retreat centres. The meaning of life is just learning how to have the opportunities to allow all the monastery to disappear, to allow all the monks to vanish, and even your own sick, old, 64-year-old body aching, farting, allowing all that just to vanish, to get beyond the wind. To get to that place where the wind doesn't blow. The deep inner stillness of the mind. And those are the places where you find meaning and happiness, because otherwise it's a total waste of time and you get so frustrated and dispirited. So a lot of people, you see them getting negative, getting depressed, even suicidal. Because, you know, basically, if you didn't know that peace and stillness, I can understand why you do that. There's no meaning in life. But if you go into those deep stillnesses and pieces of meditation, that really is powerful. You understand just, you know, why people become monks and nuns. You understand why the Buddha was. You understand. You get the taste of freedom, the taste of bliss, of release. And sometimes, you know, as a teacher, it's a wonder why more people can't do this. Because if you just get a taste of that bliss of the still mind, everything else just doesn't really make any sense anymore, compared to just the bliss of freedom. So that's one of the reasons we're here. And it's nice being able to try and inspire you and tell you why we're here. But the most important thing for this evening is to tell you how to get to those places. You know, you're always with somebody, with yourself. And it's so important that you're kind to yourself and have that compassion and acceptance. As I kept on saying, to open the door of your heart to yourself precisely as you are, not trying to be anything different than you are. Don't try and live up to some ideal of a perfect nun, and don't let other people try and push you into some ideal of a perfect bhikkhuni or a perfect monk or a perfect professor or a perfect whatever you are in life. If you can only just learn how just to be and open the door of your heart to yourself as you are and make peace with yourself as you are. And you don't have to be perfect to make peace with yourself. You don't have to have everything done and fixed up. You don't have to fix up your back or your arm or your leg or your digestion to be at peace. I've proven that to myself, and I shared that with you many times. I've been really sick many times and still managed to get into the deepest of meditations. You can't sort of go past the time when I had scrub typhus in a Thai hospital. I was really sick. Big time sick, and still managed in this third world hospital bed, being able just to, in a posture I've never seen in any book, just aching, absolutely zero energy, and I really meant I've never had such low energy ever in my life. Just to get to the toilet, which was about five beds down, that was just climbing Everest. I always remember this, and this is no exaggeration. This is etched into my memory. Just even standing up, there was no help at all. There's no nurses or nurses' assistants. You're by yourself in this ward with another dozen sick and dying monks. And just standing up and just holding yourself as you were shaking and looking at the metal bed rail at the foot of the bed of the next monk, and just getting all your energy and lurching, towards it, grabbing hold of it and stopping you falling down onto the floor. You'd made it one step closer and took maybe half an hour to get to the end where you can get into the toilet. And my goodness, you made sure you finished your business. Stayed there longer because you didn't want to make that trip too many times in a day. And that was it. And you felt terrible. And there you were, in that bed, feeling terrible. You know, for Bernard, I had this wonderful master, Ajahn Chah, who came to visit me once. Only once he came to visit me. And he was just, oh, it's my great master had come to visit me. For about 5 seconds, I felt just so uplifted. And all the pain disappeared for 5 seconds until he opened his mouth. And this, and many of you know this story. I think Bernard and Murray don't know it. He told me, he said, "Brahma Wangso, you're either going to get better or you're going to die." And then he left. His wisdom was impeccable, but his bedside manner was disgusting and terrible. That's not what I wanted. But there you were, just this terrible, terrible state of being. And then just, okay, we've got nothing else to do, let's meditate. And that was such a wonderful experience, just in the middle of a fever, absolutely zero energy. Because the only thing you could do, you couldn't try to watch your mind. You had no energy to do that. You couldn't sit up cross-legged. That was impossible. You were just lying there in the sweat, just feeling terrible. All you could do is just be. Stop trying, let it go. And that was just incredible. You got into this really beautiful meditation where all the body vanished. Couldn't feel the body anymore. Couldn't feel any fever. Just deep inside your mind and just blissing out. And that was really good bliss because, you know, what it was compared with before was just, you know, one of the worst states of the body. And then afterwards, just the total opposite end of the pendulum, having a wonderful time. And that was just showed what can be done. You don't have to get rid of all your aches and pains and your cancers and diseases and whatever else you've got. It proved to me you can get into the deepest of meditation in any physical state just by making peace, being kind, being gentle. Now that was really an eye-opener for me. Yeah, other people could have said that, and Ajahn Chah could have said that, but I would never have believed it until you do it yourself. And what that told me is you don't have to have it perfect and all the stuff all in the right place. You don't have to have your hut really clean, your robes nice, washed, everything fixed up and ready to meditate. You don't need to have any preparations at all except just sit down and let go. And it was such a relief to know that. To know it doesn't matter how old I get, how sick I get, you can always just let go and just be. And stop all this striving and craving and wanting business. And just observe this, your body and mind. Just get more and more still. Really powerfully still. Nothing moves. And then you get great meditations. And if any of you get any of those deep meditations, just one of those on this retreat for 3 months, it's worth every retreat you've ever been on. This is where you get your insight and wisdom, the meaning, the experience of deep peace, and why it comes from just letting go. And go even deeper if you wish. And go for broke till you totally vanish and disappear, which is a wonderful thing. You're kind to yourself, everything settles down, and when things are still, they vanish. See how much you can vanish. It's one of the other things I tell people, Bernard, that sometimes people come up to me and said, "Oh, you know, you got a good degree from a good university like Bernard did. Bernard became a professor, and I became a nobody, a monk, let go of the world." Some of my friends said, "You're a loser." And when they called me a loser, all the monks know this, I put my hands up and said, "Yes, thank you for that wonderful word of praise, because monks and nuns, we are losers. we lose all of our suffering, all of our pain and all of our body and all the stuff which causes suffering and difficulty in life. We just lose as much as we possibly can. If you want to be happy, be a loser. Winners suffer. Losers rock. So my advice, I say this, please don't take this the wrong way, Bernard, but because you're a good friend and I care for you, please get lost. The end of the talk. Come on.
And the Mayanga Wairakataya Sarukunam Dhamma Sin.
Sadhu, 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 sadhu,
Arahan Sangha Sambodho Bhagava Bhunan Bhagavatam Abhivade Suakato Patipano Bhagavato